The winter of 1943 arrived not with a bang, but with a slow, graying seep. It came through the cracks in the window frames, it came through the gaps in the shutters, it came through the stone walls of Casa Marino until the house itself seemed to hold its breath, waiting for the cold to finish what the war had started. Concetta woke before dawn. She always woke before dawn now. The darkness was the only thing that felt honest, because in the dark, Andrea was not gone. He was simply asleep, his breathing a low, steady rhythm against the back of her neck. She would lie there, counting the beats of his heart, waiting for the moment when the memory would dissolve and she would find herself reaching for a body that was no longer there. But the memory never dissolved. It calcified. It became a stone in her chest, heavy and smooth and immovable. When the light finally came, pale and watery through the high window, she rose. She dressed in the same clothes she had worn the day the telegram arrived. A black dress, stiff with mourning crepe, sleeves that covered her wrists, a collar that choked her throat. She did not change because the thought of shedding the black made her tremble. If she put on the blue dress she had worn to the festival in August, when she had laughed and Andrea had looked at her with those dark, hungry eyes, she felt the ground shift beneath her feet. Who would she be then? A wife? A widow? A ghost? She could not tell, so she stayed in black. The kitchen was cold. The stove had not been lit for days. Concetta knelt before it, striking a match against the rough side of the box. The flame flared, small and yellow, and she held it to the kindling. She watched the fire take, feeling the heat on her face, a sensation so foreign it made her want to weep. She did not weep. She had wept for 3 weeks straight, until her eyes were raw and swollen, until Nana Rosa had shaken her by the shoulders and told her to stop making a spectacle of herself. "He is dead," Nana Rosa had said, her voice sharp as broken glass. "Your tears will not bring him back. They will only make you ugly." So Concetta stopped weeping. She replaced it with routine. She boiled water for coffee. She poured it into the chipped cup, the one with the blue rim, the one Andrea had bought her in Palermo, the one she had almost dropped when the telegram came. She sat at the table and drank it black, bitter, scalding. The taste grounded her. It was a sensation she could control. Outside, the village was waking. She could hear the distant murmur of voices, the clatter of carts on cobblestones, the bark of a dog. But inside Casa Marino, the silence was absolute. It was a living thing, pressing against her ears, filling the rooms where Andrea's things still sat untouched. His boots by the door, caked with dried mud from the last time he had gone to the harbor. His coat hanging on the peg, the wool stiff with salt. His books on the shelf, spines cracked, pages yellowed. She did not touch them. She could not bear to disturb the dust. Enzo came in at 7. He brought with him the smell of brine and wet wool, the scent of the sea that clung to him no matter how many times he scrubbed his hands. He wore his good trousers, the ones he saved for funerals and festivals, and his shirt was buttoned to the chin. He looked like a man going to work, which he was, but his eyes were red-rimmed, his jaw tight. He stood in the doorway for a moment, watching her drink her coffee. He wanted to say something. She could see it in the tension of his shoulders, but he held his tongue. Words were useless. What was there to say? "I am sorry, it will get better"? Both were lies. "I'm going down to the harbor," he said finally, his voice rough. "The tide's turning, I'll be back by noon." Concetta nodded. She did not look at him. She could not meet his eyes. To look at Enzo was to see the reflection of her own emptiness, and she was not ready for that. "Take care," she said. It was all she could manage. Enzo lingered for a second longer, then turned and left. The door clicked shut behind him, and the silence rushed back in, louder than before. Concetta finished her coffee. She washed the cup. She wiped the table. She moved through the morning like a machine, her limbs heavy, her mind blank. She swept the floor. She dusted the shelves. She folded the laundry Enzo's shirts, Nana Rosa's shawls, her own skirt, stacking them neatly in the drawers, smoothing out the wrinkles with her palms. She tried to make everything perfect, because if she could not control her life, she could at least control the order of things. At 9, Nana Rosa came into the kitchen. She moved slowly, her spine curved, her hands trembling slightly as she gripped her cane. She did not speak. She simply sat at the table and watched Concetta work. Her eyes were clouded with cataracts, but she saw everything. She always saw everything. "You're wasting your energy," Nana Rosa said finally. Her voice was thin, reedy, but sharp. "Cleaning won't bring him back. Cooking won't bring him back. Folding clothes won't bring him back." Concetta paused, her hands resting on the stack of shirts. "I know," she said. Then stop, Nana Rosa said. Sit down, sit with me, talk to me, or don't talk. But stop pretending that if you fold this shirt enough times, he'll walk through the door. Concetta looked at her mother-in-law. Nana Rosa's face was a map of wrinkles, deep lines carved by years of squinting against the sun, years of worry, years of loss. She had lost a husband. She had lost a son. She had lost everything, and she was still here, still standing, still watching. Concetta envied her. She envied her the right to be angry, to be bitter, to be alive. Concetta felt like she was fading, like the cold was seeping into her bones and turning her to ice. I can't sit, Concetta said. If I sit, I'll think. Thinking is what keeps you human, Nana Rosa said. Not cleaning, not folding, thinking. Concetta did not answer. She picked up the shirts again and began to fold. She smoothed the fabric, aligned the seams, stacked them neatly. She focused on the texture of the cotton against her fingertips, the smell of lavender soap, the way the light caught the threads. She focused on anything but the silence. At 10, the bell rang. Concetta froze, her hands hovered over the shirts. The bell, the front door bell, the one that announced visitors, the one that had not rung in weeks. Who would come? There were no friends left, no neighbors, no one who cared. She walked to the hall, her footsteps echoing on the stone floor. She opened the door. Padre Salvador stood on the threshold. He wore his black cassock, his white collar stark against his throat. His face was soft, benevolent, but his eyes were tired. He held a small bundle wrapped in brown paper in his arms. He said, "May I come in?" His voice was melodic, gentle, patronizing. Concetta stepped aside. She did not invite him, but she did not refuse him. She led him into the kitchen, where Nana Rosa was still sitting, still watching. Padre Salvador set the bundle on the table. I brought you some bread, he said, and cheese, from the parish. It's what we do, we care for each other. Concetta stared at the bundle. She did not want bread. She did not want cheese. She did not want the parish's pity. She wanted Andrea. She wanted him to walk through the door, smelling of salt and tobacco, laughing, telling her about his day, asking her if she had saved him any coffee. Thank you, she said. Her voice was flat, hollow. Padre Salvador nodded. He looked at Nana Rosa, then back at Concetta. How are you holding up, Concetta? Concetta did not answer. She looked at the table, at the coffee stain, at the fold in the linen. He was a hero, Padre Salvador said softly. A martyr. The village will remember him. The priest will say his name at Mass every Sunday. His sacrifice will not be forgotten. Concetta felt a spike of anger, sharp and sudden, cutting through the numbness. She turned to look at the priest. Did he die for Italy? She asked. Her voice was quiet, but it carried. Padre Salvador blinked. He was not prepared for the question. He died for his country, he said, for the greater good. And, Concetta pressed. Did he die for the greater good, or did he die in a hospital bed, alone, with pneumonia, because someone lied to him? Because someone told him he was safe when he was? The silence that followed was absolute. Nana Rosa stopped breathing. Padre Salvador's face paled. Concetta, Nana Rosa whispered, stop. No, Concetta said. She looked at the priest. I want the truth. I want to know what happened to him. I want to know if he suffered. I want to know if he was afraid. I want to know if he thought of me. Padre Salvador stepped back. He looked uncomfortable, uneasy. The dead are at peace, he said. We should not disturb them. They are not at peace, Concetta said. They are gone, and I am here, and I am alone, and I do not care about peace. I care about the truth. Padre Salvador picked up his bundle. He did not look at her. He turned and left. The door clicked shut behind him. Concetta stood in the kitchen, her heart pounding. She felt exposed, raw, like she had torn open her chest and laid her insides on the table for everyone to see. Nana Rosa was staring at her, her eyes wide, her mouth a thin line. You foolish girl, Nana Rosa said. You have no idea what you've done. Concetta did not answer. She walked to the window and looked out. The sky was gray, heavy with clouds. The wind was picking up, rattling the shutters. She pressed her hand against the glass, feeling the cold seep through. She thought of Andrea. She thought of his laugh, his eyes, his hands. She thought of the last time she had seen him, packing his bags, his face pale, his eyes avoiding hers. She thought of the promise he had made, the one he had not kept. I'll come back, he had said, I promise. But he had not come back. And now he was dead, and the village was lying to her, and she was alone, and the silence was deafening. She closed her eyes. She let the cold seep into her skin. She let the silence fill her lungs. And for the first time in months, she allowed herself to scream. It was a silent scream, muffled by her own hands, by the thick walls of the house, by the weight of the world. But it was there, inside her, a raw, jagged thing that tore at her throat and burned her chest. It was the only sound she had left. When she opened her eyes, the room held its breath. The table stood firm. The bundle of bread and cheese remained untouched. Nana Rosa sat like a statue carved from shadow, her gaze fixed on Concetta with the intensity of a hawk circling prey. But Concetta was different. She was shattered, broken, but she was awake. The numbness had evaporated. The pain returned, sharp and bright and unbearable, and she welcomed it, because the pain meant she was still breathing. And as long as she drew breath, there was a chance. A small, fragile chance, but a chance. She turned from the window, she walked to the table. She picked up the bundle, she unwrapped it. The bread was stale. The cheese was hard. She broke off a piece of bread and put it in her mouth. She chewed slowly, feeling the texture, the taste. It was dry, it was bland, it was real. She ate until her stomach hurt. She ate because she needed to. She ate because she was still here. And she would stay here. She would stay, and she would wait, and she would listen. Because somewhere in the silence, there was a truth waiting to be heard. And she would hear it. The winter deepened. The cold settled into the bones of the house, into the stones, into the earth. But Concetta did not mind. She was used to the cold. She had been born in it, raised in it, survived it. And now she would use it. She would let it sharpen her. She would let it focus her. She would let it burn away everything that was not essential. She stopped sleeping. She lay in bed, staring at the ceiling, listening to the wind, listening to the house, listening to the silence. She listened for Andrea's voice. She listened for his footsteps. She listened for the bell. But there was nothing. Only the wind. Only the silence. Only the cold. And she listened. She listened until her ears rang. She listened until her eyes burned. She listened until she could no longer tell the difference between the past and the present, between memory and reality, between life and death. She was waiting. She was always waiting. And in the waiting, she found a strange kind of peace. Not the peace Padre Salvador talked about, the peace of martyrdom and sacrifice, but the peace of the void, the peace of the empty space where Andrea used to be. It was not comforting. It was not healing. But it was honest. And honesty, Concetta had learned, was the only thing that mattered. The snow came in December. It covered the village in a blanket of white, silencing the streets, muffling the voices, erasing the footprints. Casa Marino disappeared beneath it, a ghost house on a hill, forgotten by the world. But Concetta was not forgotten. She was watching. She was waiting. She was listening. And when the first letter arrived, buried under the snow, addressed to Andrea Marino, deceased, she was not surprised. She did not gasp. She did not cry. She simply picked it up, felt the weight of it in her hands, and smiled. The truth did not arrive so much as it settled. A heavy, cold weight pressing down like the iron gates behind which the village kept its secrets.